The other day, Emma asked me this question. I never really expected to hear from a seven-year-old. And so she goes, "Daddy, when will the world go extinct?" I thought, impressive. All right. To be honest, this is one of those moments I've actually always looked forward to, being able to wow my child. I said, "I've got this. Now's my time." All right. So I put on my best impression of a documentary, and I said, "Sit back, Emma. For this is a story about giant stars and forgotten planets and an explosion unlike any other." Actually, I just told her that there wasn't really much to worry about because it's going to be a really, really long time before anything like that happens, like 4 or 5 billion years. And I said, "But anyways, Emma, one day, the sun is going to lose all of its hydrogen atoms and it's going to lose all of its energy, and then it's going to be just surprisingly going to grow really, really big, and it's going to swallow up Venus and Mercury and then finally Earth, and then that's how it's going to die." You might be able to imagine how Emma responded. Maybe. She just looked at me and walked away. But that idea that one day our sun is just going to run out of hydrogen, to explode, and then kill us all, it got me thinking this week. It got me asking a question. What is God going to do about that? What is God going to do about that? What is our God of the universe going to do about the literal end of the world? What's God got to do about that? Fortunately, Daniel chapter 12 is all about the end of the world. It's a story about the end of time, even the end of history, when all of our striving for power and success and domination will have burned itself out. Last week, we talked a little bit about this, about how as followers of Christ we're called, in the very midst of all this worldly striving that we see around us, we're called to offer a word of freedom, a word of wisdom. And that word, we said, is weakness wins. Weakness wins. True power, true wisdom, we said, is only found in what we could call honest humility, in the type of sacrifice where we care more about our neighbors than we do about ourselves. Weakness wins. So when we get to chapter 12, we might be asking, what does any of that have to do with Emma's question, with this question about the literal end of the world, and how does the wisdom of weakness speak to mass extinction and the inevitable destruction of the planet in this massive burning ball of light? If Daniel's really talking about the end of the world, what about that? You might, of course, be wondering the same sort of thing maybe Emma was. If it's 4 to 5 billion years away, who cares? Who cares? But Daniel 12 seems to care. And I think that's because Daniel 12 knows that our deepest hopes and our deepest desires, they determine how we act in the now. What we hope for with regard to the future determines how we act in the present. And Daniel 12 is very much interested in how we're supposed to be living in the present today, even while at the same time trying to give us hope for the future. So let's take a look, shall we, at Daniel 12. Daniel chapter 12, we'll start out with verses 1 through 3. This is on page 729 in your pew Bible. So if you're using one of those, go ahead and pull it out. Turn to page 729. Daniel chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. Picking up where we left off from last week, Daniel's still having one of those dream visions. Only now we're pretty much finished with all those wars and rumors of wars, and we've begun to talk about the end of time and the end of history itself. At that time, Daniel's told, at the beginning of chapter 12, at that time, Michael, the great prince, the protector of your people, shall arise. There shall be a time of anguish, such as never occurred since the nations first came into existence. But at that time, your people will be delivered. every one who is found written in the book. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, and some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the sky, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. For many folks today, especially in the Christian West, the idea of people rising up out of the dust of the earth to everlasting life, comes as no surprise. All right? We're accustomed to the idea of resurrection. This is Easter, right? This is Easter. We're accustomed to this idea, people rising up from the dead. But for Daniel and his fellow Jews, this would have been a relatively brand new idea. Daniel 12 is one of the very first places in the Bible where we get any mention at all that resurrection is a thing. That resurrection is a thing. When the New Testament talks about resurrection, it's reflecting on this passage. So this is a big new deal. All right, it's a big new deal. So this would have been a brand new idea, maybe even a little, dare I say, disappointing. Because if you remember how the whole story started, Daniel and his friends Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and the whole host of their fellow Jews were carted off by the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar. And this was in the 6th century, the beginning of the 6th century BC, after Nebuchadnezzar had just decided to sweep right through the area. And he wanted to expand his domination over that part of the Mediterranean world. So this was 500 to 600 years before we get the birth of Christ. All right, the birth of Jesus, who dies on a cross and is resurrected. This is 500 to 600 years before that. And for 11 chapters, the book of Daniel seems to be doing something completely different than giving us hope for the resurrection. It's a story about a bunch of refugee Jews who were forced to move to a land they didn't know, and a land that was really, really far away from home, and they had virtually zero hope of return. That's why Daniel was written in the first place, to give them just a semblance of hope where there wasn't any, and to try to at least explain how they should go about living in the midst of exile in the meantime. So it makes sense, one would think, if this is a book about giving these exiles hope, it would make sense that at the end, in chapter 12, we'd expect to hear something about a time or a promise when all these Jewish refugees would get the chance to return to Israel and Judea and Jerusalem, and so how one day God would completely deliver them from foreign domination. That he would free them to worship, to live as they pleased once more in their own land with their own temple, their own rules. This would be the hope. Daniel even sets us up for it back in chapter 9. He asks God there to come out of hiding, do something, save us. He says, "Now therefore, our Lord God, listen to the prayer of your servant and to his supplication, and for your own sake, let your face shine upon your desolated sanctuary. Incline your ear," Daniel says, "incline your ear, O God, and hear. Open your eyes. Look at our desolation and the city that bears your name." Daniel's talking about Jerusalem. He's talking about Jerusalem. He's talking about God, send us back. God, give us freedom. Let us go home. But in chapter 12, the angel starts talking to Daniel. And we don't get any of that. There's no talk about finally being free to live and to worship. There's no talk about any sort of escaping Babylon and foreign oppression. There's not a single mention about getting to go back home. Nothing. Instead, the only hope we get is resurrection. "But at that time, your people shall be delivered," the angel says in verse 1, "for many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake." The idea seems to be that if you're wondering if you're going to get out of here before you die, you should just stop. It ain't gonna happen. That's pretty dang depressing for a book about hope. It only sort of gets worse at the end of the chapter too. Verse 13, the very last verse of this whole book, the angel says virtually the same thing, except to Daniel specifically. He says, "But you, Daniel, go your way and rest. You shall rise for your reward at the end of days. You shall rise for your reward at the end of days. There's no talk about returning to Judea or Jerusalem, not even for Daniel. All there is death and resurrection. Death and resurrection. Why? I struggled a lot with this verse this week. The thing that kept popping into my head was, I know why. But I didn't know how to connect it. I'll tell you how I know why. It's funny that my mom's here. I didn't plan this. But so many of you know that my dad died 3 years ago. And so we're sitting there, and I'm holding his hand, right? And he takes his last breath. You've probably heard that story from me and how significant that was. One I haven't told all too much is when I got back to Dayton after that. We were living in Dayton at the time. When I got back, I emailed one of my colleagues up there, and I was telling him about, hey, my dad died, you know, just stuff like this. And so we just started a little conversation, and he goes, Jason, this is why we have hope in the resurrection. This is why we have hope in the resurrection. And I thought to myself, that's exactly why. That's exactly why. In the book of Daniel, we get these mixed signals. Daniel is at the same time, the book is at the same time telling us to live in the land where you are. You're exiles in this land, but don't live like it. From the beginning of the book, we have immediately these Jews working for the foreign government, living there, working for this government that tore them away from their homes. And it's saying, how do we live in this place? And we live in this place and we work for its peace. We live as good Jews here in this place. And we make it a place of life. When the foreign government tells them to go a little bit too far to worship other things and not God, they push back. But other than that, they make for the peace of that city and that nation. They live like it. And then we have intermixed in all of this line of hope to return. Line of hope to return and to go back. But at the end of the book, that doesn't materialize at all. Instead, what materializes is life is going to blossom and bloom. It's going to be bigger than you can even imagine. Because God's not just concerned about you going back home. God's concerned about something much deeper, something that's in the very dust, as 12:1 says, of the world. This is what, last week, if you remember, I said that we have to look at Jesus, who is the lens through which we can understand so much of the Old Testament. And when we look at Jesus and we see this passage, we start to realize that there's a bigger world out there than sometimes we're able to see with our own eyes. A much bigger world that God has in his hands and in his grasp. A much, much bigger world that he cares about, and he sees the depths of it. And we learn in 1 Corinthians 15 that the depth of everything that's caused this exile and this turmoil and the destruction of homelands is not just world powers, but something much more sinister, something much deeper. And the New Testament calls that sin and evil. And in the end, death. World death. Universe death. So when I'm sitting there thinking about my dad holding his hand, all I can think about is, this isn't the way it should be. This can't be the end. Death can't win. That's why we get resurrection and hope. Because what God is seeing, the hope that we're given, is not just a return to happiness here in some place or some location, but deliverance from the very thing that causes unhappiness itself, from sin and death and evil. And we call that resurrection. 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 This is why Daniel can continue to speak to us today when we're not in the same situations. When we have the freedom to worship, the freedom to do these sorts of things that the Jews didn't have, how can Daniel speak to us? What hope does it give? It gives us hope that even the destruction of the world and a great big ball of flaming gas can't overcome the love of God. That even then God can work through this dust and deliver us in resurrection. So maybe 4 to 5 billion years from now, but its seed is in everything that we deal with all the time today. It's in our conversations in a few moments about health. It's in so many of the prayers that we just heard, these things that are ailing us. It's in cancer. It's in the anger between each other. It's in this partisanship that we're talking about. Resurrection is the answer, the hope to all of that. Because what resurrection does is it remakes the world new. That's why our hope is in that. And not in the things of this world. Not in the ideas of going back somewhere. But in living in the places where we are, producing a taste of it. And hoping for the final. When we too will die, but what will rise for your reward at the end of days?